Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Benedict and Dave. He's Benedict Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Steelers win 18-16 on to the AFC Championship game in New England. And Mr. Bryan, I got to tell you, I did get a chuckle out of the Twitter world that you had to deal with yesterday afternoon going into the Steelers victory.
Boy, I tell you, you pick against the Steelers during the regular season, you catch enough hell. You pick against them in the playoffs, and it's like people expect you because of the nature of what I do that I'm automatically supposed to pick the Steelers, every week.
And that's obviously impacting the outcome of the game because you're influential.
Well, evidently it is, and I even asked on Twitter after the game was over, do people want me to go ahead and pick against the Steelers again this week? Being as how I have that kind of power. Look, we put a lot of hard study in this. I mean, you've picked against the Steelers before. I picked against the Steelers before. I've been right before picking against the Steelers. I've been wrong before picking against the Steelers. It's just people just don't understand. There was nowhere in my blog or contract that said that I have to pick the Steelers every week, and I don't do it out of spite. I do it because that's the way I get to read on the game. I didn't think the Steelers would be able to score much more than 21 points in this game, and they scored 18. I said they'd get to 21 the hard way. They almost got to 21 the real hard way in this one as well, too. Look, I mean, there's no denying it's a great win. It's good for business when the Steelers win, and now they're going to the AFC Championship game. And look, what more can you ask for? Ben versus Brady, Steelers versus Patriots. So, great win.
Here we are, August 1st. Dave, we got to pick who do you think is coming out of the AFC? Well, I think the AFC Championship game is going to be the Steelers and the Patriots. Here we are, January 16th. It is the Steelers and the Patriots. It's not, as I've said a couple times, it was a direct route for the Patriots, 14-2 or whatever they finished up, an easy road to the AFC Championship game, a bye, and then a not very good Houston Texans team. It was a circuitous and long road for the Pittsburgh Steelers. All teams have injuries. The Pats lost Gronk. The Steelers lose Hayward, Cam Hayward. They lose Marcus Wheaton. Maybe not as big a loss, but everybody gets injuries. And the Steelers did what they had to do. They get the playoff win again. They win the division. A big win over the Ravens. You go back to that play of Antonio Brown, and that's a season-changing play. They take care of the Dolphins. And in a game yesterday that was heart attack-inducing, the Steelers were clearly the better football team. I don't think anybody watching the game, no matter how hard you were wearing your Kansas City Chief colors yesterday, that team got outplayed. But as I said at halftime, the Steelers have dominated. But to win the game, you got to score more points. And it was not clear the Steelers were going to score more points. And it came down to a penalty call was impactful. And the Steelers, my man Justin Gilbert, I was waving the flag on the opening play of the game when he got it to the 30, made an inexplicable decision to run sideways on the kickoff, and it's in the hands of Ben Roethlisberger on second and third down. And credit Ben, who didn't have a very good game, no matter what anybody wants to say, Ben didn't play that well. He made the play at the moment it mattered. He looked for his best playmaker, and his best playmaker, wide receiver Antonio Brown. He watched him go across the field. He got the ball to him. And now the Steelers get to go to New England, and we get to continue the stat, one of the more amazing stats in sports, that for the 13th out of 14th year, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, or Ben Roethlisberger will represent the AFC in the Super Bowl.
I like to talk a lot about defenses and the adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat and how important it is for teams to have that, the lower, to win the Super Bowl and all. But, I mean, year in, year out, you got to have a good quarterback. And I mean, we've seen this over the years by you know, going back to, you know, as far as you just went back, and even before then, you know, the Favres and you know, all the great quarterbacks. If you don't, you know, how did Flacco get mixed in that bunch?
Hit some loaded die that year,
you know. But and look, they had a great defense that year too, right? But and people think, look, you go back. I went ahead and pulled up my 2016 season predictions here for the NFL, and you know, just because I picked the Steelers, you know, to meet the Patriots in the AFC Championship game way back in September 8th, it doesn't mean that, you know, I don't think, you know, you get a good read on the first quarter of the season, the first half of the season. You're not married to those. I mean, it's great. It's all fun and, you know, to pick all these things way before the season starts. But people say, well, it's stupid for you to pick the Steelers to lose to the Chiefs when you had the Steelers, you know, winning the Super Bowl. Hey, look, you just get a different read on a team as things going on. And I, more than anybody, was down on this defense specifically at, you know, right around, what, week 7 or so of the season. It's absolutely phenomenal what this defense has been able to do, you know, from really the Dallas Cowboys game on. And, you know, here they are, and you have, when you have the defense moving in the direction that they've been moving in, and while the offense has sputtered, we've talked a ton about Ben Roethlisberger and his struggles on the road and all like that. But, I mean, you know, you make plays at the right time. You get the running game. You get the offensive line play that you've been able to get. Occasionally, you're going to need the defense to win you one of those, you know, one or two games during the playoffs, and I've talked about that several times. Well, what just happened there on you know, on Sunday in Kansas City? I think it's goes without saying that the defense really contributed in a victory there. And this is after the defense really looked shaky on an opening Chiefs drive. And you know, you talked about Roethlisberger, you know, not looking great, you know, not one of Ben's best games in that game against the Chiefs on Sunday. We've seen Roethlisberger play worse than that on the road. I'll tell you that. So it wasn't an awful performance by Ben, but obviously when you get in the red zone there and the mistakes that they made, you simply that's got to end right now.
So let's get into the game here. And, of course, you know, a couple things. One is both these teams, it looks like, came out of their games this week with no significant injuries. And, you know, we saw Sean Davis get banged up a little bit. But I didn't notice anything. Dave, Mike didn't mention anything in the post game. The beat writers didn't mention anybody after their locker room session. So very positive there. We obviously know the inactives were almost exactly as we talked about on Wednesday. We were debating whether Al Shabazz would be the seventh guy down because we didn't expect any of the four guys who were limited or out to play, and they didn't. So that was really straightforward there, and Shabazz was the guy down. So now, you know, it would just be the same question. Fitz Toussaint coming back from the concussion, Ladarius Green coming back from the concussion, Ricardo Matthews with the ankle, and Anthony Ciccolo with the ankle. You have to think – all those guys are kind of in the same spot. It's very questionable to be back, particularly Ciccolo, since he was ruled out early and didn't even practice. So guessing he's unlikely. But, you know, we'll see. And obviously, you know, with the play of Jesse James, Ladarius Green's impact was mitigated, or lack of impact was mitigated by James's good performance. But positive in that respect, Dave. So let's just overall why don't we start kind of a little differently than we usually do. Just what would you grade the Steelers' performance here? And you can either grade it as a team performance, or you can grade it in the three segments, offense, defense, special teams. Give me a letter grade.
Well, I think I'd like to do it probably by unit. You know, I mean, I think that's the right way to do it, right?
Yeah, I think it is.
Offense. Well, you move the ball between the 20s,
the 30s, between, yeah, right.
But you can't punch it in. Probably a, you know, like we talked on the infamous missing podcast of 2017, B minus 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 minus. You know, I think as far as the offense goes, you know, they made plays at certain times. They definitely, when the game was on the line at the end, Ben made the play when it mattered the most. The offensive line, I mean, fantastic. the blocking, both running and passing, just absolutely fantastic. You see this is a line that continues to love right now, this time of the season, to pull those tackles on the dart screen. We didn't see a lot of that whatsoever early on in the season. So I would give it a B-, and really the only reason it's not higher is the red zone fails. Defensively, B++++, I think. You had the early trouble on that opening drive. I'd probably borderline on an A- if I still wasn't so upset about them letting Alex Smith convert that 3rd and 20. that still kind of chaps my, you know what, there.
You're right. That was the play, the 3rd and 20. And give, you know, like Rodgers' play at the end of the game, give Alex Smith a ton of credit. Give Macklin credit. It was a great, you know, neither quarterback made a lot of great throws. That was a great throw. He got it right over Sean Davis and right in front of Ross Cockrell. And Macklin was there and got his feet down. They made a really good play.
So I'm at B-, on the offense. I'm at probably, what did I say, B++ on the defense. I'm giving special teams an A-, David. I mean, I worried to death about Tyreek Hill. Maybe I watched too much film on Tyreek Hill, over the course of the last couple weeks here, seeing what he did. They did not let Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce kill them. Now, did Kelce leave some plays on the football field? He absolutely did. But, you go week in, week out, and the other team is supposed to make plays when given the opportunity, and they didn't do so. Kelce didn't. You know, one huge drop down the middle with Timmons in trail. Maybe Kelce watched too much film on Mike Mitchell to see what Mike Mitchell, some of the hits he administered over the year. The fact of the matter is he didn't make the catch. But, you know, back to special teams, they did not let Tyreek Hill kill him. And because of that, I give him an A-, David. And two returns to the 30-yard line. I damn near fainted after the first one. Definitely fainted after the second one. And then, I mean, you have to.
And then almost killed yourself on the third, on the last one.
Chris Boswell, 6 field goals. Jeez. I mean, what more could you want from your special teams unit? Good job. Can't believe I'm going to say it. Good job, Danny Smith. And the only reason that's not an A++ is because of the Steelers' first kickoff.
Squib kick.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Dave, I agree almost perfectly with your grades. I'd give the special teams an A because the squib kick, man, I've been railing on the squib kick. I've been writing about that for 2 months. I don't know why they do it because their coverage is awful. It's exactly what I wrote about. It gets picked up at the 20 and returned at the 40. And this one, they returned to the 45. And it's just ridiculous. Offense, look, Le'Veon Bell offensive line, A+, obviously. Receivers, not many drops. We'll get into a little bit of the detail there. Ben, he wasn't great, period. I mean, we have a quarterback rating of 82. It's not – that's kind of how he's been on the road. He had the big turnover, didn't throw any TDs. So, I'd give him a C grade at best. So, yeah, I like your B-, for the offense. I really like the B++. Chiefs score in the first drive and Chiefs score in the last drive. And one of the things that I like to point out all the time, and, you know, people should remember this on both sides, when the Steelers do it and when other teams do it. When you have one extra down, you have 33% more downs. I mean, the fraction is 1/3. It's not 1/4. So you get an extra play. And that, you know, if you did that, that's why so many people, when they think about it at high school level or college level, why they encourage teams, you know, the math says go for it, that a lot of people aren't used to, because historically forever, you punted on fourth down almost no matter what. Well, if you get an extra play, you just get so many more opportunities to sustain drives and to score points. And the difference is, in that last drive, the Chiefs converted 2 fourth downs, and they wouldn't have played that way if it was in the second quarter. They certainly on the first one would have kicked the field goal, and in the second one, you know, they probably would have kicked the field goal. But they, you know, give the Chiefs credit; they got the extra downs, they converted it, they kept the game alive, And then they score the touchdown. And they had, you know, that play they ran from the, you know, whatever it was, from the four on fourth and two was a really well-designed play to a guy that, you know, was a non-factor in their offense. So good on them. So I like the grade for the defense. And, yeah, I'll give the special teams an A. One bad play isn't going to knock the grade down for me for six field goals, two returns to the two bad plays. Justin Gilbert's return at the end of the game was inexplicable. But the tackles, Vince Williams hit on Tyreek. The other two plays they made to keep him inside. I mean, the fact that he had four kick returns for 72 yards, I mean, I think Steeler fans thought he was going to average 72 yards a kick return. So I'm dead on with your grading. And by the way, hey, Steeler fans, let me tell you about mortgage rates near or at all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxen at First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that'd love to give you the opportunity to get involved, and he'll love to help you out. You can call him today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig Oxane at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320398, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me ask you. I think you're being look, it's not going to go down in the annals as one of the great Roethlisberger playoff game performances, but you think you might be being a little bit too critical of Roethlisberger in this situation? I mean, you're talking about a guy that only failed to complete 11 of his passes. 64.5% of his passes were completed. Sure, the interception. Look, we don't know what really happened. I can't remember. I don't think Ben. I listened to the press conference, but I was trying to write at the same time, so I probably wasn't overly focused. I don't think he discussed that interception. That seemed like more of a hot or something.
I think it was. I think Charlie and I talked about it in the post game. The blocking was run blocking type of blocking. It looked like it was a run over the right side. Ben read something, I think, and Charlie said the same thing. So this isn't just my view. He said, Ben probably misread what the safety was doing. Thought he had man coverage out there. Didn't really. And also, so he probably got fooled by the safety. It didn't look like he was throwing a back shoulder throw. It looked like he was kind of throwing, and it wasn't a straight fade, but the safety stayed back there. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure that ball's not intercepted if it doesn't get batted, but yeah, I agree with you. He didn't tell anybody. That was just he checked with Ben, checked with Ben with AB, and it was just they were running a play because he thought he had single coverage out there.
And look, I mean, we're talking about what did I say? 11 failed completions in the game. The first one came on the very very first throw of it, the very first throw of his, almost picked off by Don Terry Poe. And then we just discussed the interceptions. Number two, he had. What was it? Another throw that I think wasn't one tip that on a play that Eli Rogers was asking for a pass.
Yeah, that was barely. In fact, I think Eli Rogers had the play might have been overturned on replay, but I'll guarantee you no ref saw that in real time because nobody saw it in real time. That ball was imperceptibly tipped.
All right, so we've covered three of the 11 incompletions right there. Another one went off Eli Rogers' hands in the end zone where I don't know if maybe, the way Ben grimaces sometimes, you don't know if it's him that thinks he could have thrown a better football or if he thinks his young wide receiver should have run a little bit more vertical of a route. But remember the one in the end zone that Eli.
Yeah. They threw it a little back shoulder for him. I wonder if Ben led him more to the middle of the field. That's where he had the open. But yeah, I didn't. Good point. I didn't know if Ben was annoyed with himself or with not annoyed, probably not. Just wished that he had thrown it in a different spot or wished Eli had done a better job. But a tough catch, interesting throw. Yep, that's another one that you had the AB rip out in the end zone by Marcus Peters.
Right.
Play by Peters.
Great play by Peters to rip that football out. Ben had another one high, I think, in the first quarter over to the left sideline over AB on the third down, right?
Yeah. Dave, that was just like the interception against Miami. Ben on the run forward, thrown to AB. Both times, I got in a debate on this on Twitter with some people who really felt like both times AB should have caught the ball because both times he was fully extended and had his hands on it. I think the Miami game, I felt like you know, maybe he should make that catch ball a little bit behind him. He did fully extend and he did have both hands on it. Did you think that was a ball AB should have caught?
Yeah, let me go look at that again sometime. I'll tell you this. It's not heavy on my mind. And
okay, and, fair enough. And that was the third
and
down.
Look, I'm doing my best. District attorney, public defender here, trying to defend Ben here. So if, you know, if I thought that, I would definitely bring that up to you. Now, also another miss over to the right side. We don't, you know.
Yeah, that was the weirdest throw of the night.
Now, was
he missed it by 5 yards and didn't look, it looked like if you were gonna guess. And you wanted to guess and defend Ben, you'd say AB ran the pattern 5 yards deeper than he was supposed to.
Exactly, or didn't come back, you know, didn't break back on the ball. So I mean, really, really hard to assess blame there, in my opinion.
He had 3 missed targets to Le'Veon Bell, and none of those really stick out to me.
I'm trying to remember the ones to Le'Veon Bell, and I've watched the game 3 times, and I'm drawing a blank on those. Let's see here, when did those happen? I think those are the other 3, right? I mean,
yeah, one to Jesse James. I don't remember that one either. So off the top of my head. So, but look, here's the thing. His numbers are, you know, 20 of 31 for 224. Now I'm going to, you know, if we're going to do a real assessment of Ben, you take off the 29 yards at the end of the first half on the last play of the half when, you know, I don't know why they don't Hail Mary into the end zone. I mean, I kind of know why they want to get in their playmakers' hands, but those are kind of garbage yards.
Fantasy yards right there. AB had himself in one of those personal daily fantasy games right there.
Got him over 100 yards in the game, you know. So he threw for about 200 yards, no TDs, 1 interception. You know, to me, his passer rating 72.5. You know, that's kind of what we've seen on the road this year. He's been averaging about that kind of number. That's what we've seen in the playoff games. Ben wasn't terrible. Look, he threw the 52-yard pass to AB with the ball with guys at his ankles. That's a tough play to make. He made some great pumps and found Jesse James in the middle of the field a couple times. Those were good plays. And he made the play that won the game to AB and the play before to Eli Rogers. I mean, that play counts too. They were big plays. It's just, you know, you looked at the quarterback play this weekend and you saw what Matt Ryan did. You saw what the 2 quarterbacks did in the game before the Steelers. You saw what Tom Brady did. And those guys were playing elite level quarterbacking, and you know we didn't see that from Ben in this game.
Here's what I wrote in my 7 keys this week. The titles alone, you know, the headings alone should probably give it away what the focus is. First one, Alex in chains. Okay, I talk a lot about Alex Smith in the 3rd and 6 or longer, and boy, did the Steelers really outside of that 3rd and 20, and I think another maybe 2 more 3rd downs in the game of 6 yards or more. They really did a good job of keeping Alex behind the chains. King of the Hill, I think. That's Captain Obvious right there. Keep Tyreek Hill in check. I was really worried that the Chiefs were
I do like, by the way, I got to give you credit. I read these, and I do like your creative titling.
Well, look, a little songwriting or title background writing back in the old days with some help from illegal substances kind of end up paying off on me. Screening for Vengeance. I was worried that the Chiefs were going to really learn a lot from that game against the from the Steelers game against the Eagles. Remember Darren Sproles and a couple of the screens in that game. And if you look at what Spencer Ware, sure, Spencer Ware hasn't caught a whole 30 something balls during the regular season. What he's done after the catch was like the second or third, you know, most yards after the catch. So I'm surprised we didn't see more of that. Patience with Patient Bell. Was the other one, because I thought there would be some times early in this game where the Steelers might want to try to get away from the run, that they just had to be patient with him, because you look at what the Chiefs...
And you're right, by the way. You were right, because they did get away from the run when they got near the goal line.
Right, and patience with Patient Bell. That's what I wrote, and that, I mean, I know that disturbed a lot of people there at certain points during the game. I'm a big fan of if things aren't broken, you don't fix it. You know, shortened the field again. You know, pretty obvious there. The Steelers offense needed some short fields to work on, much like they got in that first game against the Chiefs. And then number six for me was high percentage Ben. And this is what I wrote here. Roethlisberger doesn't need to throw for 300 yards and five touchdowns Sunday against the Chiefs like he did back in week four in order for the Steelers to win. For the starters, you know, the Chiefs were missing a cornerback in that game. Yada, yada. You know, more than anything, Roethlisberger must pick his deep shots. Needs to use those Bell and those mesh routes and those short RPOs underneath. And because, you know, he's facing the Chiefs defense that finished tied for the league in interceptions, you just didn't want, you know, you didn't want to put the ball anywhere it didn't belong against a defense that done so well taking football away. And I guess this is where I'm going, is that this is really why I thought, or why I probably think Ben had a better game than probably you did, because I was looking for a high percentage completions when he did go deep. You know, I really on that pump fake completion to Jesse James. Jesse James gets up like he's expecting a whistle or something because he's so damn wide open.
Well, you know, not to, again, just if we're kind of nitpicking Ben's performance, that's not a great throw. I mean, he's standing there wide open in the middle of the field, and he has to go down to catch the ball and then get back up. I mean, you remember what happened. He gets to the 5-yard line, and the next play is the interception, right? You know, you wonder if he hits him when he's standing up, if he takes that ball in the end zone.
Sure, and that's why I'm not going to say here, boy, Ben deserves an A+ in this game. But you know, you kind of open up saying, you know, Ben struggles on the road. You know, really didn't have a good game this time. I just think you're being a little bit too critical of Ben this time around.
Fair enough.
And my final seven keys was wreck the Ford. You know, I went into this game not so much worried about Justin Houston and Tamba Ali. Houston hadn't played since week 15, I don't think. Tamba Ali, bless his heart, Father Time, really got a hold of him. I was really more concerned about D Ford and outside of that coverage sack, which, I mean, let's face it, that's what it was, right? When Roethlisberger was sacked, do you remember D Ford's name being called a whole hell of a lot in this game? So
not he or Ali.
Right. So, you know, I really, those are my seven keys, and you know, the screen passes really didn't come into play. What do you think about the way Andy Reid used Tyreek Hill, almost like, okay, we know you're gonna pay so much damn attention to Tyreek Hill, we're going to do the old sleight of hand, you know, we're gonna use it where you're so focused on him that we're gonna end up getting the ball in the hands of other people. I thought that was very creative, but do you think Andy Reid concentrated on that maybe a little bit too much?
I think that's a good question to ask. Obviously, it worked for them on that opening drive, and then I don't know that it was featured enough with or without the ball after that. I'm gonna just throw, since you gave your keys, I didn't get a chance to get, because I got caught up in the Dallas-Green Bay game, I didn't get a chance to kind of storify my thoughts before the game. If you listen to the podcast, you know most of them, but Dave, I wrote just very quickly on Twitter right before the game. I wrote, the goals are similar to the Miami game. Landry Jones got his. Kelsey's going to make plays. Just limit the yak. You wrote about that with Jarvis Landry last week. Shut down the run and make him put the game in Alex Smith's hands. Smith's better than people give him credit for. But Chiefs only 21 points or more in one of the last five home games. Simply, if Steelers don't lose the turnover battle, they win the game. I expect offense to be very good, better than last week. I don't expect much from Hill. And I didn't. I mean, I just didn't think, you know, you look at Travis Tyreek Hill's numbers, and they're similar to Eli Rogers' numbers. He was not a force in the offense, although he did score six receiving TDs. He averaged less than 10 yards a catch. Sure, he had an 11-yard carry average carry, but yeah, you know, and those are gaudy averages, but he only had 24 carries on the season. I mean, you know, that's, you know, you do the math. That's not two carries a game.
Well,
so,
half of his rushing yards came on two carries.
Right. Yeah. Two explosive plays.
He had a 70-yard touchdown, like a 67 or 68 yard touchdown. And what did he have? Something like 260 or 277 yards rushing on a season or something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like Darius Heyward-Bey averaged 60 yards a carry. He had one carry for 60 yards. So I just didn't think Hill was going to beat the Steelers in the offense. Didn't mean he couldn't make a big play, but I just wasn't worried about that. And obviously I was worried like everybody else in the return game. And, you know, credit to the Steelers for changing their approach once the squib kick didn't work. They said, all right, let's see the best guy beat us. You know, we'll go mano a mano. And the Steelers won that battle. I mean, he had 72 yards of return. I think he had, you know, about 50 yards of offense or something like that. He wasn't a factor. So, yeah, it's a good question because when they did use him as a decoy, they were effective. It was effective. So he should get credit for some of that. But with the ball in his hands, he wasn't a game changer. Now, I will say the Steelers did pay attention to him, and you're very right to bring that up. Should they have used him as a decoy more? Should they have gotten the ball in his hands more? Those are good questions because, you know, even on that final drive, you can say he was the guy who, you know, made it happen in terms of, you know, their ability to convert. Him being the decoy. So it wasn't like he was a non-factor in the game, but with the ball in his hands, he wasn't a game changer. But I agree with you. Creative play calling by Andy Reid. I'm thinking here about what you say when you know somebody. Everybody's going to think I hate so and so, and because I say this, yeah. Obviously, I don't hate Ben Roethlisberger. It's just we talk all the time about play, and I know there are a lot of staunch defenders of guys. No matter how they perform, people are going to be in their corner, and I respect that. You know, Ben's getting paid $20+ million, and the Steelers have other guys. And look, at the end of the game, I'm glad they put the game in Ben's hands. And I like that. And I asked on Twitter, Bell or Ben? And I asked before the last play, third down play, run or pass? And I said, I'm on the record as saying pass. And I wanted Ben making that decision, and he did, and that won the game. It's just – that's just not – if you take all Ben's games and say, where does this rank above or below the line or the middle – it ranks below the line in the middle. So I think it ranks
above the line, but I mean, look, we just went over almost all 11 of the incompletions. So, I like it better when
you think in his career performance of, 200 games, you think that's in the top half? No touchdowns, one interception, 200 yards.
Well, I mean, obviously outside of the red zone fails. I mean,
that's part of the game.
What I wanted, and I covered this, going into this game against a decent Chiefs defense, more than decent Chiefs defense, was some high percentage and don't make a lot of mistakes.
Let me give you one thing. Let me give you this. Ben, inside the Chiefs 30-yard line, 6 for 15 for 9 yards, one interception, a 20.1 passer rating. Anywhere else on the field, 14 for 16, 215 yards, 118 passer rating. So he was great in between the 30s. But I mean, 6 for 15 for 9 yards inside the Chiefs 30 was not very good.
Sure. But one of those is ripped out of Antonio Brown's hands, too. We already talked about
all right. They still, we don't uncount the ones that AB makes great catches, so let's not count the ones that
makes. But you have to take all this. I mean, you just can't rattle me. I mean, as much as I'm the biggest.
His job is to get him in the end zone. They didn't get in the end zone the whole game.
Right. I mean, sure, I'm not going to argue with that. But right. I don't think it's as bad as maybe as you tried to paint it opening the show.
Okay, so let's change the focus. Was the play calling inside the 20-yard line bad, that they didn't give Le'Veon Bell the ball at all?
Well, look, I mean,
it didn't work, so obviously it's easy to say it was bad, right?
It was there right from the start. The running game was there right from the start. I mean, why do you go away from that? I'm curious to know what Ben did see on that interception play. Cause look, you need to jam that thing on up in there. I think,
I agree. I mean, look, that doesn't even go back to the one where he checked out at second and two from the 5. I mean, he checked into a play where he ended up rolling right and throwing to Bell at the pylon there where, he didn't have anything, just kind of ran out of time. you know, he checked out, it looked like he certainly changed the play, whether he checked out of a pass to another pass or he checked out from a run to a pass. I just don't understand why, Dave, why they're, when they're inside the 20 so often they go empty set. Just, I don't get it. Because they, the best job the Dolphins did against the Steelers was when they went empty set. They stopped the Steelers empty set. They rushed three, put eight in coverage, and the Steelers didn't do a good job. And when they went empty set, it just, you know, it didn't feel like they were very good in this game either.
Well, they seem to like to use a lot of kings definitely in this game and spread the Chiefs out, right? I mean,
just two terms. If you can explain to our listeners what kings are and what a dart, what dart.
Well, the king. You know, you talk about personnel groupings: 11 personnel, three wide receivers, one tight end on the field. You know, that kind of thing. You'll hear Keith Butler. A lot of people just give it a personnel grouping number, but Keith Butler wants to make sure he throws around kings and all like that. So, you know, three wide receivers on the field at a time when you're talking about kings personnel. A dart concept. You know, you can use the dart concept various different ways, but in general, it includes a tackle pulling across the formation. Okay, right. So when you hear someone say dart play, it's probably better to use the word dart concept because there's so many different things that you can do off that. And then, you know, we saw some other stuff with, you know, hat tip to Marquise Pouncey as well, too. We saw what we like to call some pin and pull type stuff.
And he was out there up front on that. We saw an alley pull. We saw Pouncey. Those are two plays that were highlighted on NBC. Collinsworth was making a point on two of those. I mean, you see Pouncey out there on that run that AB got down the sideline. Talk in layman's terms a little bit. You know, we talk about loving watching guys pull, and the guy we see pull most often is obviously DeCastro. Ramon does it a lot less, but we've seen a little bit more of it than we've seen in years past. We haven't seen the tackles pull a lot in years past. We saw some of that this year, but pulling as a center, when you have to focus on the snap and you lose a beat making the exchange versus what everybody else gets on the snap of the ball. So it's just that much more difficult. You're obviously over the ball, so you're pinned a little bit tighter to the line of scrimmage. To be able to get out like that is unique.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, for him to be able to move like he's moving right now, and for them to be able to look, they can basically pull anybody they want right now, right?
I mean, it feels that way.
I mean, it really does, because we've seen obviously DeCastro pull a lot. We've now seen both Gilbert and Villanueva pull. We've seen Foster pull, and then, you know, Steelers have used Ramon Foster quite a bit, and additionally earlier in the season, BJ Finney. I'm sitting here watching the end of this Dallas game here, and it's like I'm reliving it all over again with him, Mason Crosby, making this kick here.
What are the odds of Mason Crosby hitting both those field goals? I mean, you remember 4 years ago he couldn't hit the side of a barn going into the playoffs, and they stuck with him. I thought he was going to get cut. That's the first game he's ever hit 250-yard field goals in the same game.
Quite amazing.
I bet against him on the first one. I didn't bet against the second one, but 56 yards.
Yeah,
Justin Tucker.
Right. I didn't think he'd make it. Be quite honest with you, that 56, that's for sure. But
all six times Boswell lined up. I mean, I barely looked up to watch. I mean, I was like, yeah, he's gonna make it. All six right down the middle. I mean, none of them were really close to the uprights.
You ask me if any doubt ever crossed my mind on any of them?
Yeah, on Boswell's.
Yeah, there was a moment or two where I
thought. How about when they were in the air?
Not so much when they're in the air. It just more of those, man. I get into a law of averages quite a bit sometimes.
Right. He's made 20 in a row. He's due to miss.
Right. The old.
He has made it. I think that's 20. He's about 20 in a row in the playoffs now. He missed the extra point last week. That's the only playoff kick he's ever missed. He's got 9 field goals in the playoffs. They played 2 games.
You know, back up, rewind it back to the podcast the other day. I believe I said the Steelers need their killer bees to step up big. I forgot to include Boswell, and he's a new member of the killer bees now. Boy, yeah, I didn't see that coming at all. Having to rely on him on 6 field goals. Back to your original. We went down a heck of a wormhole right there. I'm good at making you go down some of these rabbit holes. You talked about running the football, you know, and not doing so inside of 20. They sure seem to like to spread that Chiefs defense out, right, and run against that with 11 personnel, with, you know, that kind of stuff. And I mean, there were some times where I just wish they would have ran more, and I'm not sure I thoroughly understood. I thought maybe Roosevelt Nix maybe got hurt on the opening kickoff or you know, something like that, because it took a while to get him.
Yeah. Did he play the first quarter?
Maybe not, but boy, when he's in the game, you damn sure do notice it, don't you? I mean, he was only played 10 plays, and I think I can recap about 8 of them for you.
I agree with you. I was a little surprised not in there more often, and I have to tell you, there was I had an all-time favorite. This would go down in the books as an all-time favorite play call highlight. For me, the Steelers, and it was a Le'Veon Bell play, Dave. I don't know if you noticed it. I tried to mention it on Twitter, but things were, you know, the game goes so fast, you don't get to sit on top of these things for very long. On Bell's 38-yard run, where he goes into the hole, follows Nix, opens it up, and then he cuts left on the linebacker. Al Michael calls him down. He says, and Bell's brought down, and Le'Veon Bell goes for 12 or 14 more yards from the minute Al Michaels calls him down. He says, He calls him to, you know, and Bell's wrapped up, and he's like basically calling the play over, and he has to change his call like a second and a half later that, oh no, he's still going. And it's not, he's still going. It's not like he pushed a pile forward for another yard. He went for 12 or 14 more yards. And if you go back, and if you get anybody gets a chance to watch this with sound, watch that play. It's in the third quarter. It's one of his very first carries. Obviously the Chiefs had the ball to open the third quarter, and then the Steelers get the ball. And he goes bang for 38, second longest run of the year. Both his 2 longest runs were against Kansas City. And it's hilarious because it looks like he's getting wrapped up. And then he breaks free of that tackle, and he just goes further down the sideline. So if our listeners get a chance to kind of replay that one, enjoy that call.
I wrote this on Twitter. I think one of my other articles, I wrote this past week, that the Chiefs really had done a great, even though the Chiefs run defense hasn't been great from a yards per carry perspective or a successful play perspective, they haven't given up many explosive runs. Really, I think I measured it even like 15 yards or more, you know, because a lot of times you measure explosive plays by 20 yards. Well, I think we need to relook at that again, at what is an explosive play, just an explosive play, regardless of pass or rush. I think it is. I think 20 yards is 20 yards. I don't think you should quantify an explosive run as one being 15 yards or more per se, like some people like to do. But going back to that, the Chiefs had done a great job of not allowing, I think it was something like 12 carries of 20 yards or more on the season, and Bell had 2 of those during the regular season against the Chiefs, and I'll be damned if he didn't have two more against them, you know, in this game Sunday night. So That says a lot. Boy, we sure were complaining a lot during the middle of the season, saying, boy, yeah, Le'Veon Bell sure gets a lot of these 8, 7, 8, 9, 10-yard runs. Where are these explosive runs at? He's had a few of them, though, these last couple weeks, though, and those are great to see, because that's why you call them explosive runs, because they really flip the field when you're getting 20 yards or more at a time there. So, boy, he is, David, it seems like I wrote this on Twitter this morning, it seems like he gets more patient by the week. If he gets any more patient, he's going to be handing the ball back to Roethlisberger, because sometimes it looks like he just comes to a complete stopping. I think NBC had a great kind of, it looked like he was just skipping there on a run to the left side there.
I remember that specific play. He did almost come to a dead stop.
And here's the thing, you go back and I watched a lot of his tape at Michigan State prior to the draft and all like that. And then obviously, you know, first couple of seasons in the league. I mean, he's never been a bam hit the whole kind of runner, but does it just seem like he's just getting more and more patience as the weeks go by, or are we just paying more and more attention?
I think it's a little different than we've seen in the past. And you wonder if there's a point where it becomes too much. I mean, you know, give the Chiefs some credit. Basically, after that 38-yard run, Bell didn't have too many gains more than, you know, 3 or 4 yards. We can talk about whether they adjusted their defensive splits and how they changed things. Look, the Steelers had a lead of 15-7. You know, the Steelers, when they have the ball, are trying to work clock. And so the Chiefs are going to put guys in the box. Yeah. You know, and you also look at the numbers we're going to go down about 7 tangents here. Here's one thing to pay attention to, and I think this will be dramatic. Put me on record right now saying it.
Is a tangent anything like a rabbit hole?
Yeah. This is going to be a tangent off a rabbit hole into a wormhole. This put me down on record 10:30 Monday morning as saying we have not seen Le'Veon Bell involved in the passing game in the playoffs. He had a couple catches against the Dolphins. He had 2 catches. I think he was 2 for 7 last week. He had 2 for minus something this week, -4. I expect that to change dramatically in the Miami game, in the New England game. I think Bell will be heavily used in the pass game, maybe less so in the run game. But in the first 2 playoff games here, he had 31 touches, and then, you know, I think he had 30 yesterday. I think he'll be around that number again against New England, but I expect him to touch the ball 8 or 10 times in the passing game. Much more than he has the past 2 weeks. And look, the Steelers tried on the opening play to get him the ball in the passing game, and if that pass is complete, trust me, he's going for 20 because he's got 2 linemen out front of him and 1 linebacker and nobody else. So I think it would have been a big play, but that's just pay attention because, you know, we've talked all Le'Veon Bell's career about what a difference maker he is in the passing game. And, you know, when you get 2 catches this week, and I'm just trying to look up, make sure I got the number right last week. Last week he had 2 catches as well. So in the playoffs now, he has 4 catches for a total of 3 yards. He's been a non-factor in the passing game. And, you know, I expect that to change.
Right. But, I mean, against the Patriots, that's been the MO when they've played the Patriots versus that kind of defense. I think they've had success in the past using Bell in the passing game against the Patriots, right? I mean, didn't he have something
Well, they've
like,
had success using Bell in the passing game against everybody.
Right. But, I'm talking about in the game earlier this season. Didn't Bell have something like 10 catches for like 70 yards or something?
I'd have to check. Yeah, I will, but I don't know off the top of my head. Don't remember off the top of my head.
And don't we remember even going back to the first game last year of them lining them up in the slot a lot against the Patriots, going back to that, the week 1 game, the regular season open against the Patriots, right? 2015, am I right there?
Well, that's who they played. Again, I don't off the top of my head. I don't have his receiving stats, but
because I remember, I think I had to chart that. No, he didn't play in that one. It was because he was suspended for that one. It was Williams
against New England this year. You're correct. 10 catches. He did have 10 catches. Only 68 yards on that. He had a long of 22. In that game,
and then I'm thinking of Williams. Then that was maybe lined up because obviously Bell, I don't think played. No, he couldn't have played in that week 1 game against the Patriots year before that because he was suspended. I'm trying to remember what other time, if there was another time that I just remember him having. Maybe I'm just focused on what happened last year. Because I seem to remember he had like 10 catches on something like, I don't know, 15 targets or something against the Patriots earlier in the season. And, I mean, he obviously didn't play in that game in week 1 in 2015. I'll have to look at his history against the Patriots, see if he's played a
Well, my larger point being, expect Bell to be back into the passing game. I would think this week against the Pats. You know, for nobody, you know, again, this is one of the things we highlight about he's the best receiving back in the game. And if you'd said in two playoff games he'd have 4 catches for 3 yards, you'd take that as a bad sign. But you also probably wouldn't have guessed that he'd have 337 yards rushing. So,
well, you like back-to-back
Steeler records.
Yeah, you like to use him on them choice routes and all for sure, and especially if you can get him singled up on a linebacker. All right, what else do we have to kind of wrap up from this game?
Bud Dupree? How about Bud Dupree and James Harrison and Ryan Shazier? Just the linebackers, again, being fast, being impactful. Dupree getting a hit that set up the interception. How about the interception by Shazier? First of all, he has great hands. Second of all, he got absolutely drilled and he popped up in half a second. I mean, he did get crushed, but he didn't care, man. 4th interception in 4 games. Pretty damn good.
Yeah, we're starting to see Bud Dupree maybe a little bit of being able to have a counter and a little bit of bend to him a little bit.
He's
as
getting
well.
Around the edge on guys. I mean, you know, I feel like maybe, you know, maybe I was a little over exuberant when he got back, thinking he was more impactful than he was. But I mean, just watching how fast he plays, and just, you know, thinking again about the difference in the draft choice of Jarvis Jones and Bud Dupree. One incredibly impactful in college, didn't test very well athletically. The other not impactful in college, tested great athletically. Doesn't mean you're going to be always right or wrong one way or the other. But clearly, the Steelers won with one and lost with the other. It really looks like Dupree's the real deal.
What about the whole front as a whole? I mean, What would this defense be right now if they had Cameron Hayward?
We get to dream. We've done it a couple times about next year, but how about the development of Javon Hargrave as a pass rusher? We knew that he had that interior burst, but man, you think about him and you almost feel like, look, he's not going to really be an end guy, but I feel like in the sub-package football next year, when you've got Cam and Tuitt, you know, obviously you're going to have them on the field 80% of the time, but it doesn't feel like you're losing a lot when you got Hargrave out there.
Boy, it sure would be nice to start seeing Tuitt and Cameron Hayward only have to play like what 78% of the total defensive snaps during the season. Even 80 would be a large improvement. Imagine, you know, every third or fourth series, maybe even being able to get Tuitt or Cameron Hayward off the field. But the whole front as a whole, I mean, we're starting to see times with 4-man pressures or 4-man pass rushes that you're actually getting some push and pressure. Even sometimes on 3-man pass rushes, you're saying, okay, well, look, that was only a 3-man pass rush. They were able to get a little push there. James Harrison, my God, I mean, the guy just continually, I mean, Father Time is having a hard time hawking him down. You talk about Hargrave too. You know, it's not oftentimes that you want Hargrave running with a running back down the field, right? But
he and Timmons both, you know, Timmons down the field with Kelsey and Hargrave and Harrison one time, I think, as well.
Harrison with Hill in the flat.
Not the ideal matchups. Let's just go. Where dropped that pass that Hart, you know? Look,
sure.
Let's be clear about a couple things. The Chiefs left some players on the field. You mentioned it up top.
Absolutely.
You know, the Kelsey kind of drop. Mitchell had a good hit. The Ware drops that. That's a first down. And it was a bad throw by Alex Smith to Chris Conley when he was behind Artie Burns.
Absolutely. That you know, he'd like to have. But look, we knew going in too that Alex Smith, not the most accurate deep ball.
He's not Aaron Rodgers.
Not the most accurate deep ball quarterback. What about the one? Who was the one that dropped one over the middle kind of later on in the game? Was that Macklin or Wilson?
Wilson, because he only had 2 balls thrown to him. He had the touchdown, and then he had that one. Coming right to left, right? Over the middle.
Right. Look, I mean, we talked about this going all the way back to the regular season open against the Redskins, right? I mean, defense wasn't that great at sometimes, and Kirk Cousins didn't make some throws. I mean, that's
a good point. Gave up 16 points in both games, and it felt like they could have scored more.
Yeah, I mean, now
how about the fact that they're back-to-back playoff wins on the road, both 18-16. Cincinnati last year and this game, 18-16. What are the odds of that? That's not exactly 21-17, a common score. 18-16 in their last two road playoff wins.
There's your pick four numbers of the day, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Look, I'm shocked the way this defense is playing. Did and look, you go back to the touchdown two with Artie Burns. A little bit of a rock and a hard place on that play. That was just another one of those plays where maybe you get kind of so busy looking into the backfield and seeing what's happening with Hill, and then Smith rolls out your direction there. What do you do? Do you run with your guy? Do you worry about Smith bootlegging it, walking into the end zone from what was it, like 4, 8 yards out, whatever it was? You hate that. But, I mean, outside of that, we saw Burns fight through a blocker, wide receiver block on a screen. Outside of that opening drive, really, really not a lot to be mad at. Then, you know, Sean Davis on that hit late in the game. Look, that's a tough position for a safety to be in when a guy's going to the ground like that, and you want to try to separate.
Yeah, what are you going to do there? Really, right, what are you going to do?
Tough play there. And then, James Harrison draws a holding call on one of the most important plays of the game, you know, on a 2-point conversion there. And then Sean Davis makes a big, I want to look at the all 22 of that to see just how good a play Sean Davis made on the pass breakup on the second, you know, on the retry from on the 2-point conversion there as well too. So we're seeing week in, week out still, we're seeing these young players make plays. What about Mike Mitchell? You know, Mike Mitchell made a lot of great second, and you don't want to consistently have to talk about your safeties making tackles at the second level, right? But he was right there at the second level making tackles when they need to be made, right?
Yeah, he did. In fact, I said one play after, you know, one play after Mitchell spent the time trying to rip the ball out of Travis Kelce's hands instead of tackling him. He then made a tackle on Spencer Ware when he broke through the line, and Mitchell was really kind of the only guy there as Ware went for, you know, 10 more. The only one of the few really good running plays they had, just right up the middle. He beat the line, and then he got past the linebacker, and it was Mitchell made a great form tackle. It's just the play before, he's sitting there trying to rip it out of Kelce's hands, and Kelce goes for, you know, 5, 6, 7 more yards.
It didn't feel like a lot of missed tackles in this game, and it didn't look like it when I went back through the tape again. William Gay, a great play on one of those flip shovel passes to Kelce down deep. I think they eventually scored on that drive, though, unfortunately. But, I mean, it didn't feel like a lot of missed tackles in this game. It didn't feel like a whole heck of a lot of yak yards after the catch in this game.
No, in fact, I think the only yak, you know, Kelce had a little bit on a couple plays, but it did not feel like guys were running through the secondary catching the ball over the middle.
And then the three runs by Hill. Shazier was in on all three of those tackles, right?
Oh, here's a play. I'll write about it. Dave, you take a look at it when you go back through. Remember that let me just look at my notes here to make sure I got this, that I say this right. Tyreek Hill gets the ball on a running play, and he goes over, he goes down the left sideline, and Shazier runs all the way across the field, takes a perfect angle, and knocks him out a yard short of the first down. So the Chiefs, you know, it looks like it's going to be an easy first down. He knocks him out of bounds a yard short, and then the Steelers get the stop on the next play on third and one. And it was it's a play that, you know, nobody's going to talk about it, but it was a really big play in the game. And you know, good on Ryan Shazier, his speed and athleticism just continues to impress, you know, every single week.
And they didn't have him in that first game, right?
All three of these matchups didn't have him in Miami, you know, because these games were almost sequential, right? Miami was week 6. Week 6, Kansas City was week 4, and New England was what, week? It was middle of the losing.
Seven or eight, right?
Seven, I think 8. It wasn't New England, Dallas back to back, so it was 7. Then the bye, and then Dallas, right? Or maybe that's – well, I'll double check. But anyway.
Dallas was week 10.
Okay. And they lost to Baltimore the week before that. Week nine. Yeah, that's when Ben came back. And the bye was before that.
Week eight was the bye. Week seven was New England.
So they, you know, the teams are playing in the playoffs here were weeks four, six, and seven. So it's it's interesting. All the guys who were out were kind of out. The changes are the same, you know, the narrative's the same about who played and who didn't.
Here's the thing with Tyreek Hill. One of his rushes around left end came on a 2nd and 10. I think that's the one you're talking about.
Nine.
And Shazier got him for a gain of 8. And then 3rd and 2.
What was the next play?
Was to delay a game on Alex Smith. And then they were faced with 3rd and 7, and then Smith was sacked by Debo at the 50, and then they punted after that.
First down there would have been, you know, whatever the, you know, the just around the 40-yard line. All of a sudden, they're, you know, talking about field goal range.
Tyreek Hill's, I think, his 2nd carry up the middle. Shazier got him for a gain of just 3. And then there was another, and I wrote about this in my Tyreek Hill post last night, was his longest carry, which was for 9 yards, came on like a 3rd and 13 play. So, he got 9 yards, but it's an unsuccessful run, you know, when you get in those situations. All right, real quick, Antonio Brown social media and getting that the Tomlin post game comments out there. In the grand scheme of things, it's not a huge deal. But I mean, come on.
In the grand scheme of things, it's nothing. It's like Joey Porter's stuff, where it's not going to impact the game at all. You'd rather it didn't happen, though, right?
Right. I mean, as much as players like to connect with fans and get them, you know, access and all like that. Some things just don't need access, and those are one of those things.
I had a couple of people, and I'm sure you did too, Dave. I'm sure we were included on some of these. A couple of people say, you know, I gained a lot of respect for Tomlin, you know, seeing the post-game speech he said in the Antonio Brown video. That happens every game. I mean,
we just don't see it. Right.
Just because you don't see it, that, you know, you don't think Tomlin's like that. You don't think there's a reason the players love him. And that, you know, when I hear that kind of response, like, do you think that the only time, you know, Mike Tomlin, when he speaks, is at the press conference, and that there's not a million things going on behind the scenes? I mean, come on. And this is when people talk about Mike Tomlin as a coach, you know, you get to see him on Sundays and Tuesdays. And I don't see him a lot more, but I obviously talk to a lot of people who see him a lot more. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, look, I'm in Tomlin's corner in a big way, as much as I, you know, just like I'm in Ben's corner in a big way. Doesn't mean that Ben hasn't struggled on the road this year. I mean, if we're going to be analysts and be honest about things, we're going to try and tell it the way we see it. I think both those guys are going to be guiding the Steelers in 2021. I keep pushing it up a year every year. So, and I think that's a good thing. So, the video, people will talk about it a lot today. It will not be a topic of discussion until Friday when I get, you know, when we get interviewed and the national media asks about things that happened 5 days ago. We'll give an opinion, non-factor.
Sometimes you got to use if you're going to be an effective cheerleader, you got to use a few dirty words, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, so we're about an hour in here. We'll start Steelers versus assholes in the AFC Championship game. Can I say that on a podcast? I
think Benedict Bryan can say whatever he wants.
Yeah. All shame on me. But I'm glad one of us was right and the other one was wrong. Sure is better for business when the Steelers win.
I'll tell you, this will be a fun week. And we'll try to get Ben Volen to join us. I'm going to give him a call on Wednesday. There's a lot of Pat stuff. You know, look, we talk a lot of Steelers. We're going to be talking a lot of Patriots in the next two podcasts just because it's fun. Look, this is a great team. Whether you like them or not, doesn't take anything away from what they've achieved. And however you think they did it, fine. But they're going to their – Brady and Belichick are going to their 6th consecutive AFC championship game. That's astounding. So, you know, we're going to spend some time on the Patriots over the next two podcasts.
Yeah, do you saw one opening line at 6 points?
5.5. You know, 5.5, and I think that tells you, you know, obviously Vegas isn't quite sure where the money's going to come. It's already moved to 6. I'm guessing game time line will be 6.5. I don't think it'll get to 7, but I think, you know, the Patriots have been very good to their I think they're 13-3 maybe against the spread this year, 13-3-1. They have been very good to their bettors, so I don't think their bettors are going to abandon them in the championship game.
And let's face it, I mean, this is a Steelers team that even with Landry Jones had a fighting chance. You know, now did
– sorry to interrupt, Dave, but let me just drop this on you. Remember, there were two holding calls that were crucial in that game. Same type of play that Harrison's holding call. One, the Steelers got called for a hold around the edge. Villanueva did. I can't remember who it was on, but it was a kind of a questionable holding call. The Steelers had a touchdown called back on that play.
Hubbard, you mean, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah,
On the other side.
Okay, well, whatever it was, right? They scored a touchdown on the play, called back, or they had a positive play, and then the Patriots end up. James Harrison's going to get to Brady. And he gets – Solder, I think, gets him just like he got taken down in the Kansas City game. And they didn't call it. And maybe that's the play that was the touchdown. And you reverse those two plays in that game, maybe things come out differently.
Yeah, they gave him – you know, look, the Landry Jones red zones interception hurt. You know, you got – here's the thing. I mean, we saw this week that – you know, if you play good against the run and get a tip pass here and there from Brady, you know, get that ball to bounce up in the air, you know. But it's going to be tough to get Brady to throw and, you know, to turn the football over a couple more times in this game. So the Steelers are going to have to be, you know, damn near perfect on the off. You got to play keep away. That's what you do every time you play Tom Brady, is you got to keep that offense off the field as much as possible here. So, all right, well, we'll have plenty of time to start talking about this thing. And, you know, people can follow me on Twitter and get on me for being a bad fan blogger. If you will, at Steelers Depot, you can follow David Todd, who is a homer, on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow a very neutral Twitter feed at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can donate to the show, SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button in the upper right navigational bar. Oh, wow. I'm going to watch this game a couple more times now.
And let me just give our buddy Craig one more plug as we get out of here. The mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than spelling. Gronkowski. Let our buddy Craig Oxen guide you through this sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in New England somewhere. And if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. And call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. So this is the time of start looking at homes. If you're ready to buy this spring, make sure you get to our buddy Craig. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Benedict and Dave.